From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Megan Kelly. Welcome to Consider This in Boston. Every year, thousands of families across the Commonwealth make the gut-wrenching decision to force a loved one into addiction treatment. It can be a controversial move here in Massachusetts, which is believed to be the only state that uses jails and prisons for involuntary commitments to addiction treatment. Despite the controversy, both House and Senate lawmakers have approved spending millions of dollars for involuntary commitment programs in jails and prisons. And that has some lawmakers, advocates, and families concerned. WBUR's Deborah Becker has been reporting on this, and she joins us now to explain. Hey, Deb, thanks for being with us.
Sure.
So tell us more about these facilities and these programs. How do they function in Massachusetts?
Well, basically, Massachusetts has a law called Section 35, and that means that someone can go to court and ask for a civil commitment to addiction treatment because they are concerned about someone's substance use. And if a judge says that that substance use is dangerous, imposes a danger to the person who's using or others, then the judge can order that person to be held for up to 90 days. So among the facilities that take these Section 35 commitments are two for men that are in correctional facilities, and these are the largest facilities that the state has. And one of them is the Stony Brook Stabilization and Treatment Center in Ludlow. It's a facility that's overseen by the Hampton County Sheriff. It's got 152 beds. It opened in 2018. And I spoke with Catherine Nash of Holden, who committed her son there at the very end, the last day of 2019. This is what she said.
We both thought it would be help, and it wasn't. It was the opposite.
So Nash says her son, then 27-year-old Jesse Harvey, who was a well-known harm reduction activist, did not receive real treatment there. She said also arbitrarily he was not allowed to leave when he planned. So he had to give up the last semester of getting his master's degree, and he lost his job. She says that made him despondent, and Harvey died of an overdose a few months later.
That's absolutely heartbreaking. But it sounds like there are some others who say that that Stony Brook facility has helped them.
That's right. Jim Derrick, I spoke with him as well. He committed his son to treatment there about a month ago, and this is how he described it.
He was telling me how good he felt about the care he was receiving, which is, this is our fourth trip through the Section 35 process with him in the course of 3 years.
And Derek says, you know, this has made him hopeful. He became very emotional when he described what led him to civilly commit his son this time. He said police found his son with another man. The other man died of an overdose. And the police told him, you need to commit your son and have him in a secure facility so he's safe and stays alive.
So when a person decides or a family member decides to have someone civilly committed, do they know where they'll be committed or do they have a choice?
No, they don't. And once you file a Section 35 petition for commitment, you can't withdraw it. It's up to the courts, which really is up to bed availability. So there are three facilities for men, and two of them are run by corrections. The other one that's run by corrections is the Massachusetts Alcohol and Substance Abuse Center in Plymouth. It's in a former minimum security prison there. I spoke with 29-year-old Victor Castle. He was committed to MASAC about a year ago after being in and out of treatment.
I've been through the whole ringer, and I would say that MASAC was the worst place.
Now, Castle says after about 6 weeks, he was released from MASAC, and he relapsed a few days later. He went back to detox. He's been drug-free for 8 months. And MASAC, being in a prison, is run by the Department of Corrections. And we reached out to DOC, and it said it's made improvements to MASAC and is working toward becoming an accredited treatment facility. So the state does have, we should say, one Section 35 program for men that is not in corrections, and that is in Brockton, actually. It's run by the Department of Public Health. And Victor's father, Phil Castle, said when he went to court seeking this commitment, that's where he hoped his son would be sent. Let's listen.
To have this sort of Russian roulette for people who file Section 35 petitions where they don't know if their child is going to get treatment or incarceration, the system is ridiculous.
So how common is this for family members to use Section 35 to civilly commit their loved ones?
Well, in Massachusetts, it's pretty widely used. More than 6,000 petitions were filed in the last fiscal year. A number of states have increasingly signed or passed civil commitment laws for addiction, which would allow them to commit people. The interesting or different thing, really, about Massachusetts is that correctional facilities are used. And we should point out that the money in the House and Senate budget proposals would increase spending at both of these facilities, at the Hampden County facility, Stony Brook, and at MASAC in Plymouth. But neither the House nor Senate budget proposals include an additional $14 million that Governor Baker proposed to further expand and enhance Section 35 programs there.
Is there any evidence that these programs work?
Well, not according to the experts. They say that the research is murky. Much of it shows that involuntary commitments can actually be harmful sometimes. There are studies that show an increased risk of overdose after someone has been involuntarily committed. Some say an increased risk of death. I spoke with Dr. Todd Kerensky, who's president of the Massachusetts Society of Addiction Medicine, and he basically says what is clear is that people should not be going to correctional settings for treatment.
There is no reason that any person in this state should go to a house of correction for a Section 35 commitment.
And Kerensky is among those urging the state to instead invest in voluntary treatment for people, which he says has certainly better statistics in the research.
Well, Deb, thank you so much, as always, for all of your thorough reporting on this issue.
You're welcome.
That's WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker. Before we go, here's what else is going on. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is proposing immediate changes in the city's schools to prevent a state takeover. Mayor Wu says the plan is designed to address several problems highlighted in a recent state review.
We are confident about all of the goals and metrics set up in this document. It is a plan and a guide to hold ourselves accountable.
Earlier this week, State Education Commissioner Jeff Riley said he needs assurances that the city will be able to quickly improve issues such as special education and transportation. In other news, parts of eastern New England are in a drought. WBUR meteorologist Dave Epstein says a lack of rainfall could affect trees and gardens.
We are having a very dry spring. We're going to end up as a top 10 dry meteorological spring, which started back on March 1st and it ends on May 31st. So this is very dry. Leaves are smaller than you'd typically find. Plants are struggling already a little bit, so you'll need to augment your watering. And if you are putting in new perennials, new trees and shrubs, Mother Nature's not going to help you. You're going to have to water.
If we don't get more rain before June, this will be the eighth driest meteorological spring on record. And you can expect warmer weather this holiday weekend, with temps reaching into the 80s by Monday. Also, tomorrow in Bourne, volunteers will place American flags on the 77,000 graves of veterans buried in the Massachusetts National Cemetery. The group Operation Flags for Vets says they're expecting a few thousand volunteers to help with the traditional project. And finally, the Boston Calling Music Festival kicked off this afternoon at Harvard's Athletic Complex for the first time since 2019. Festival co-founder Brian Appel is thrilled to welcome back thousands of fans. And if you're going, he has some advice.
If you're coming, come early. You know, make sure that you give the regional and local bands, you know, the attention that they've earned and that they deserve. Don't just show up for a headliner or for two bands. Make sure you're really spending the day with us if you can. And don't drive over here. Make sure you're taking public transportation, please.
We'll be covering Boston Calling all weekend on air, on our website, and on our Instagram account. Thanks for joining me this week as I hosted Consider This. My usual daytime job is running WBUR's social media accounts, and it'd be great if you gave us a follow on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us at WBUR everywhere. We're going to ring you out on a tune from local band The Chelsea Curve, who played at Boston Calling this afternoon. From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Megan Kelly. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back. Hey there. A lot of people listen to Consider This at the end of the day, and NPR's Up First in the morning. But a lot of the actual news happens in the middle of the day. And the team bringing the best information about that news as it happens is the team behind WBUR and NPR's show Here and Now. And yes, there is a podcast version. So want more of the best news reporting from public radio around the country? Check out Here and Now. Find it in the same place you found this podcast, wherever you listen. Just search Here and Now.